This episode is powered by Untold Content's Innovation Storytelling Training. Increase buy-in for your best ideas in this immersive and interactive, story-driven experience, where your teams refine their storytelling techniques for their latest projects, prototypes, and pitches. Plus, get inspired by 25 epic examples of impactful innovation stories. Learn more at untoldcontent.com/innovationstorytellingtraining. Welcome to Untold Stories of Innovation, where we amplify untold stories of insight, impact, and innovation. Powered by Untold Content, I'm your host, Katie Trapp-Taylor. Our guest today is Dr. Merit Moore. She's known as the Quantum Ballerina. Dr. Moore graduated with magnum cum laude honors in physics from Harvard, and then with a PhD in atomic and laser physics from the University of Oxford. At the same time, she was pursuing a professional ballet career with the Zurich Ballet, Boston Ballet, English National Ballet, and Norwegian National Ballet. She's a Forbes 30 under 30, and she was one of 12 selected candidates to undergo rigorous astronaut selection on the BBC series Astronauts, Do You Have What It Takes? So today we are speaking with a physicist, ballerina, astronaut. Merit, I am so grateful to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure. I'm a wannabe astronaut. So
that's right.
In
sure.
The working. Hopefully yes. One day that will be part of the title.
That's right. I already know about your incredible work. I have read Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls to my six-year-old daughter at night, and we've come across your story, which is so impactful and powerful. Mm-hmm. And of course, then in doing more research about you, realize that yes, one of your dreams is to dance in space, right?
Yeah. I mean, that is the ultimate dream. That is, I think after pursuing, like, I gravitated towards physics and dance naturally. And then after I graduated, well, actually, right while I was writing up my thesis, there was this opportunity to apply to be one of the 12 selected candidates to undergo astronaut selection process with astronaut Chris Hadfield. And I was lucky to be one of those 12. And it just blew my mind away. And I was like, wow. I hadn't thought about this. Like, this is an occupation that, you know, incorporates both high mental rigor and physical strength. So, and I've always been an adventurer. So since then, I'm like, I want to go dance on the moon. Let's go.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So that only, it sounds like that only catalyzed your desire to do that even more.
Yeah, for sure.
For those listeners who maybe haven't seen your Dance with Robots, it is such a moving and meaningful and just sort of an otherworldly experience to see. And I'd love to know, first of all, if you haven't, if anyone listening hasn't seen it, certainly you need to go research it and look and just watch how dance between Merit and robots changes how we view technology. It's really moving. I'd love to hear if you could kind of take us back in time and kind of tell us about when you first started playing with this concept of scientific communication through dance.
Yeah, certainly. And I hope that it's to expand more to scientific research through dance. So my background's physics and then obviously, you know, I have my dance background. And when I was finishing up my PhD, I've been kind of hiding for the past 10 years, like from the dance world, I pursued physics, and from the physics world, I pursued dance. Like, I just kept them very separate. And after 10 years of having done 4 years of physics at Harvard, 5 years at Oxford, plus the four ballet companies, I was like, why not both? Why can't I merge them? And in pursuing that, I think the questions that led me were, I was intrigued by how technology and scientific research could kind of inspire human creativity and inspire new choreography and inspire new movement. And so I kind of went down this rabbit hole And I was started asking these questions. And it's so funny how like the universe kind of throws things at you. So I was asking these questions while I was dancing at Norwegian National Ballet. I was performing Swan Lake in La Bayadere, and a friend of a friend, I found out, like, worked in robotics. And I had to ask, I was like, can I come in, hang out with you? So I would go, like, after rehearsals, in between performances, I would go and just start playing around. And it's, this robot is like a six-jointed industrial arm, right? So it's, it doesn't have like two legs, two arms.
Right.
It's just like one weird six-jointed thing. But I was super intrigued by how it moved and how it could inspire me to create new movement, and how I could then incorporate the movement onto the robot. And was invited by Harvard Art Lab to be one of their first artists in residence to explore this. And the Art Lab is an incredible space where they allow artists, give the artists the space to pursue research without the pressure of a final performance. So I was given the space to research. And this was January and February 2020, right before COVID. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit. I was in London and, you know, everyone's locked down. And it was such a devastating time. I mean, I think it's still quite devastating for the arts and dance in particular. And I think when faced with a challenge, I think instantly my brain goes, okay, here we're confronted with a challenge. What, you know, there's a silver lining to it. And what is it? And what, you know, what can I do to push the arts forward? And so, you know, I had to make a number of phone calls to the robot company, Universal Robotics, who's wonderful. And I was like, do you want to lend me a robot? And they're like, not really. And I was like, but actually, I think you guys do. And so they finally agreed to lend me a robot. It was going to be just for 2 weeks. And then it ended up being a month, and then it ended up being a couple months. And now it's a continuation and a really, really wonderful collaboration. And I've been having just such a great time pursuing that.
Can you take us into the science and the tech mm-hmm. of how you approached choreography? And mm-hmm. Were you coding the robot's movements? Were you partnering with other technologists who were supporting that? And what was that collaborative process like?
Yeah, so during lockdown, it was definitely a one-man show. Well, I would say a one-man plus robot show. I would have to program the choreography with various, what they call them, waypoints. So you set the points that you want the robot to move, and then you have to set the speed, and you have to set like how you want it to curve. And then the hard part is like making it fit the music. And so I'm they're programming it, and then I've got my iPhone and hitting play on the music, play on the video recorder, play on the robot, like play on myself. I'm just like, tripping over wires, editing. So all of that was definitely, yeah, it was just me. Like there were sometimes
amazing.
When there wouldn't be, I was just really fortunate that there was this deserted theater in London and they let me hang out there during this lockdown. But like there were times when it was too dark, and so I'd be carrying this 20-foot ladder to like put the light bulb up on the thing. Like I literally thought it was going to die. I was like, you know, like what we do for the arts, man.
Do you think, how would that process have been different were we in non-COVID times?
I don't know if I would have explored it the way that I did. And I think what COVID forced us to do is to re-question and reanalyze and redo everything. And so I would have been super busy with all the other gigs that I had lined up. And I don't think I would have had months to call up robot companies to beg them for robots, and nor the time and the space to spend, because it would take me hours. Like, so when I first got it, you know, I would spend morning to midnight every day working on it, and it becomes easier as it goes on. But in the beginning, it was like, well, I don't know, like, how on earth am I going to make this six jointed thing look like, or like resemble the movements of a two-legged, two-armed human, right? Like, it's just, so I found it super interesting. And like various questions that came to mind was, you know, research shows that 90% of communication is nonverbal, predominantly body language. And so I was kind of like, does body language necessarily have to come in human form? Can it also come in this weird robotic form? And so it's just been a really interesting time, also in pushing the arts, pushing dance. And also it's a wonderful opportunity to work with the best minds in robotic research around the world. So one is like Jose Luis Garcia, who is at Harvard, was helping me like make it interactive when I was at the art lab. We've got like great collaborators in India. Just like now been working with another company, Robotique, who just sent me like the gripper, like a little hand thing and a, what they call like a force co-pilot. So it can remember movement better. So I'm loving this as a, opportunity to investigate research more while enhancing the art form. And so, because I think often there's that belief that science and art should come together, but the, I think, somewhat disappointing outcome is that it normally just tends to be art helping science communicate. It tends to be like science communication in an art form, but I think the standard of both tends to drop. So the standard of science tends to drop and the standard of art tends to drop when they're merged together. And I've been super passionate about pursuing these with excellence. Hence, I had pursued them separately. But now as I merge them together, I want to make sure that they're enhancing each other and improving each other. Not, we're not dumbing both down in order to make them fit together. So it's like, you know, how can my being like, I really want this robot to be moving around the floor. Who do I talk to? What roboticist do I talk to? How do we like collaborate if it doesn't exist? How do we create it? And also on the arts side, like, oh, like with this new technology, can we create these emotions in this way? So I'm just really enjoying it's, it feels natural in the way that these are coming together.
Definitely. I think that story of collaboration is, it's really unreal. And that image of you, so certainly the collaborative part of it, but also just the, there's so much beauty in that image of you in the theater working hour after hour alone with the technology, trying to uncover it. And for the research purposes that you had, I think a lot of quarantine times have called our creativity into question. It's been a major challenge, I think, for almost everyone to dream up new worlds when we're so confined. Yeah. And you did. It's such a beautiful example of that. I just wanted to reflect on that first. And then I want to dig more into this idea of art as a form of scientific communication versus versus both elevating the other. So many of the people who we work with at Untold are coders and technologists and inventors and innovators trying to build new technologies and ideally building those technologies in a way that's deeply empathetic with the people who ultimately will benefit or use those technologies. But oftentimes they sort of fall into typical or standardized ways of communicating those innovations, you know, focusing on the features or the very detailed, fact-filled science behind it, really important. But something that we try to do at Untold is like research story frameworks, arcs, patterns, map them into innovation contexts in order to try to more deeply understand how can we push innovation storytelling beyond some of those sort of standard or default approaches. So yeah, anyway, I'd love to hear your perspective on that. And then I have a question, of course, about story in the choreography work that you do, but that's maybe a follow-on question. Okay.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, case in point was, you know, working with Universal Robotics and the various robot companies that I'm now working with. And I think initially there was a hesitation, understandably, you know, there's like this random girl keep calling them up. Of like what they're like, you know, people aren't going to be buying a robot to dance with, right? So I think in their heads, they're like, why? I don't know why this is going to be beneficial for the company to have these dance, you know, robot dances. What the, you know, what is this? But I think what they found is when I started publishing the videos was A, the excitement that came around it, B, the viral nature. So like certain videos would get like 14 million views in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that they would never get with showing the robot lifting a cup, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And you know, their mission in their motto is continually it's human machine interaction, human machine collaboration. But I think there's a lot of fear towards machine and robots. But now I think when men and women see, you know, me dancing right next to it, they're like, oh, actually, this girl's like dancing with this robot. Like, how scary can they be? So, you know, like it's like subliminally kind of like forwarding these messages. And I mean, talking about like subliminally forwarding messages, but for me, a lot of my motivation behind this as well is just creating a different image of what it is to be a scientist and playing with tech, right? It's, you don't, doesn't mean you have to be sitting in a corner regurgitating facts from a book. You can be creative. You can be, you know, artistic. You can want to discover tech. Like, it's not scary. You can be feminine. You can not be, you know, you can do whatever you want, but just try to, I think by creating it, offering a different image than what's typically there, it allows people's imagination to then be like, oh, okay, you know, maybe I can have a robot soccer player, or like, you know, like, huh, you know, if it's dancing to Bruno Mars, then maybe he can do other things.
Yeah, it's really both. It's the work that you're doing, transforming what it means to be a physicist and a scientist. Mm-hmm. And conversely, the work that you're having the robot do changes our perception of what's possible or what robots are for, or how they're supposed to exist in the world, and therefore our perception of them, which may open up whole new areas for different applications in medicine or education, or who knows, that maybe wouldn't have even occurred to us had we not seen this softer, more collaborative side of the technology. And like you said, this sense of fear that we often have around AI and robotics, and that fear of replacing the human. I just think when you watch the movements that you're able to achieve with these robots, it tells such a deeper and such a different story. It's really, really deeply powerful. It's not surprising how viral it's been.
Thank you. And that's really interesting what you just said of that fear of replacing. Because I was like, it was just popped in my head now. I'm like, you know what I should do is also show a video of just the robot on its own. Because then it doesn't work. You know, when the robot's just on its own, you really kind of need both the human and the robot there. For that image to be as powerful as it is. So,
You know, too, I think there's an emotional response or catharsis that happens when you're watching. And there is, and I'll link it in the show notes too, but there's research out of Harvard Medical School a few years ago that dancing and movement activate our emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And that just, it this brings that to bear in such a different way.
Oh, super cool. Yeah, I'd love to read that.
So, okay, let's dive into this idea of story, because I'm fascinated by the kind of storytelling that you do, again, as a physicist and as a ballerina. So are there certain, would you say when you're approaching choreographies, is there a certain story or story intent or story arc or storyline that you come in with? How does that change over time? And so, yeah, if you could just kind of speak to, I don't know if you, if you sort of approach your work as a choreographer around story or not.
I would, it's all new to me. So I think my main intention when I was working with the robots was, I think the best outcomes is when you give yourself the freedom to play. So I've just been at first going in with the feeling of, okay, let's just play and have fun and let's see where this goes. In terms of story, I've not actually done full length or longer dances of story. And so I'm super intrigued by this as well. Like, I've now been meeting up with a friend who's really into poetry and reading more about storytelling, because that's not my world at all. I've gravitated towards these very nonverbal mute activities that don't really have like that storyline arc. So it's been an interesting, it's definitely part of my growth, and I love how this research and this work is forcing me to explore other fields like that.
You know, actually, this reminds me, I think perhaps the best way, so from my perspective as like a storytelling researcher, I think what you've done so far with robotics and dance is sort of what we call staging. You're setting up the context that helps us all get behind and understand what's possible and sort of the lay of the land here. And you're right. It is sort of setting you up perhaps for then now making longer pieces or involving plot in new ways. But yeah, like right now we're sort of in that beginning part of staging this. And I think there's still story behind it, but maybe not in the beginning, middle, and end kind of traditional way of viewing story.
No, but if you want to talk more about this at some point, or like anyone in the audience, I have been asked to create a longer version of this. Various like 5 minute long, 20 minute long, 30 minute long. And so that's currently on my list of projects. And I find it quite daunting. Readily am very eager.
I would love to brainstorm. That would be a dream to me and my
let's
team.
Let's do it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And there's just right off the top of my head too, a really fun story framework. This is just one of a million.
Okay.
But it's fun to play with. It's called Arc of Narrative. Okay. And it's a text analyzer. Well, first it's a theory. So it sort of looks at story from the perspective of how much time and at what moment in the sequence of the story are we staging versus progressing the plot versus other functions. And then it takes every popular film, or not even popular, just pretty much any film, you can look and see at what point in the film is it doing those different narrative arcs. And then you can even put in your own text. And granted, it's usually a written form, so I'm not sure it doesn't really necessarily work with nonverbal, but yeah, it kind of shows these patterns and it traces them on the XY axis, and it's interesting. So you can check that out to kind of start thinking about that idea. But that's only one, story framework of a bunch. We're collecting so many right now and we're trying to map them to different moments in the innovation process.
I was going to say, especially if it plots onto our XY axis, we like graphs and we like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and that takes me back, like, can we dig a little bit deeper into that moment where you're trying to work with robotics companies mm-hmm. and maybe the ones who didn't immediately get it? Could you take us a little bit deeper into that moment? How did you have to change your pitch to help them see it? Or was it just one of those things where they had to see the video in order to, and to see its impact on society when it clicked? Or was there another way that you were able to frame it to help them understand the potential value?
Well, I think in the beginning, I was just incredibly stubborn. And I think I messaged everyone on LinkedIn, like connected with the company. I was like, hey, hi, me again. Yeah.
There is so much power in that, though. This podcast and the fact that you're on it is a testament to us doing that work too. And not being afraid to ask when you believe in something and you really need to do it and understand it. So
I think you have to really believe it. And I just really, man, it was what I wanted to do. I was like, we are in a lockdown. I want to work with this robot. I think I can create dances. No one's able to dance, but I think I can do it. Like, whatever it takes, I'm going to make this happen. And so I think, but you know, at first the loan was just 2 weeks. And once the footage started coming out, then I think they were a lot more on board. And I totally understand the hesitation in the beginning, because I think it's hard to describe something that's in one's head. And I didn't even know what I was going to be doing. So it's just been, it's been a journey. And what's fun is it's continuing. Like, the artistic side is opening up, like, so many doors on the artistic side. And on the technological side, it's actually kind of hard to keep up. But it's been lots of fun.
It's really neat. Could you give us some hints into, you know, future research questions that you're going to be pursuing or performances, or if you could kind of let us know what you think the future might hold.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely intrigued by having it more interactive. So at the moment, when I was first working at the Harvard Art Lab, we were using these VR handsets, just the handsets, not the headpiece, to pinpoint in location where I want the robot to go. So it's a lot more interactive, and I'm working with the robot as I'm moving. So definitely in terms of research, like, wanting to experiment with that more of the real-time interactive. During lockdown, it was difficult because in order to implement that, you need a lot of sensors and you need a lot of equipment and tech backup. So I just did these dances that are choreographed, and it's not in real time. But exploring that, like, there's also putting the robot on another robot that moves around the floor, or working with gestures and motion capture, and ideally at some point, like, with AI. So when I was at Norway, you know, I got suited up in the motion capture suit and would dance, and that data would be stored to be fed into a machine learning algorithm that would then choreograph new movement. And so, like, working on, like, mapping that onto the robot and
amazing.
So that would, yeah. But I mean, these ongoing research stuff, it takes a while.
Oh, I'm sure. It sounds incredibly complicated. It sounds simple as you explain it, but I'm sure the execution is incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
How fun. There's so much about this too that makes me think of all of the people who are working in robotics or in other forms of innovation that are sitting at the lab bench and just playing and experimenting, and how the movements that you're kind of calling forth are bringing their work to light in so many ways. There's just this other in my mind too. It's the beauty of sort of bringing the experimental and the try and try again and the failures that come with having to be playful as we work to make technologies better. It's representing that in so many ways too.
Mm, yeah, I definitely believe in play and experimenting. for sure.
One of my favorite lines too, Merritt, and I believe it was in your London Vogue piece when they interviewed you, was that you have little girls writing to you and sending you pictures of them with their science goggles and lab coats and a tutu on. And so it's amazing. So yeah, what I think I'd love to end, because I know you have a lot of work to do, but could you share with us as we wrap up some advice that you have for young girls and how they see themselves as and what their lives might be?
The advice I would give is, one in particular is, like, give yourself time. I think there's so much pressure right now for being immediately brilliant and, you know, achieving incredible success in a day. And, or if you're not brilliant right away, then maybe that's not for you and you should be doing something else. And I think there's, well, for myself, like I'm one where I enter a room where you give me an activity and I'm definitely not brilliant the first time I try, nor the second, nor the third, nor the fourth, nor the fifth, right? Like I've got a very slow plateau in the beginning, and then somehow it all accumulates and then I get it and I understand. But that's after months, years of kind of just being happy, being in the room and plodding along and knowing that every hour of work that I put in will pay off in the end, and just not always as expected, but it will pay off. And it might be like a year from now, it might be 5 years from now. So yeah. I think the one of the big things is, like, give yourself time, and also, you know, your time's precious. Like, also value your time. So realize when you have, you know, 20 minutes, if it's, is your attention going to the phone, or is it going to, can you better yourself by going to a book, or even just daydreaming out of the car, I think is incredibly helpful. Because that's when, yeah. So it's like giving yourself the space and the time.
It's that beautiful image as you're saying that. I see you in that theater. And for all the sadness and all the challenges that COVID has brought, there was this time that many of us were granted to sort of carve out a new world, and you did. And I'm so grateful that you did. I know the world is grateful. And I'm so thankful that you came on the podcast. What a wonderful way to spend some time together. And I'm looking forward to sharing this with my six-year-old and also with the larger innovation community, for sure. Thank you so much, Merritt. What a wonderful...
Thank you so much. And please tell your six-year-old, I say hi.
I will. Where can our listeners find you?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and website, Physics on Point. And then website is physicsonpoint.com with a E at the end, and LinkedIn, Merritt Moore. That's perfect. Where I'll be.
We'll link to all of that in the show notes, and I'll talk to you really soon.
Cool. Yeah. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Be sure to follow us on social media and add your voice to the conversation. You can find us at Untold Content.